Greetings to each one. Wish each one the grace and peace of God this morning as we gather to worship. Also bring greetings from the brethren at home. And as was said, we are a church plant group from Paris, Tennessee, and Oklahoma is beginning to feel like home, but we're in the middle of the work. And I'm assuming that even though for us we are new in the community, I'm assuming even though you've been here many years, you're in the middle of the work also. Several months ago, we were in Crossville, Tennessee. My mother-in-law passed away. We're there for that, for her burial, and got into a conversation there with a group of brethren. We were talking in different communities, and one of the brethren raised a question. He said, I've been observing something, and he wondered what we thought about it. And his observation was, he said he sees that there are young men who have a zeal for God, and they are serious about God, and they're serious about life, and they're serious about their families, and they're serious about the church, and they make choices, wise choices, with that in mind. But he said they get up about in their 50s, and their families are almost, they're about done raising their families. And he said those men start making choices that you just wonder. You wonder where they're at, and you wonder what's happening, and somehow the choices they begin making doesn't line up with the choices they have been making. He just raised the question, why is that? And I've been thinking about it ever since. Because that's where I'm in life. That is, he was talking about my age group, and he was not far behind me in age. But I was pondering the thing of middle-aged men, middle-aged people losing the way. You know, we've seen young people who have made wrong choices and never choose the way. But we're talking about something different. We're talking about men who have chosen the way and something happened along the way and they lost the way. That's what we're talking about this morning, and I was thinking of that. And I thought of the words of Paul. He was writing to the Corinthians. And he mentioned things in the Old Testament that happened. He reminded his audience of things that happened. And then he told them like this. He said, these things were our example, to the intent that we shouldn't do like this. And then he went on and he related other things that the children of Israel did. And this is what they did and this is what happened. And he went on to say that these things happened to them for examples, and they're written for our admonition, upon whom the ends of the world are come. Now, I don't know how you view the Old Testament this morning, but I love the Old Testament. And I think I'm correct in saying that this is one story. Now, there are two covenants, and I'm not trying to lift the old into the new because the old has been fulfilled in the new. But it is one story from Genesis to Revelation of God working and bringing about the reconciliation and the redemption of his people. In the Old Testament, there's probably various reasons why God did the things he did and how he did things, but the Old Testament is the story of God preparing for the New Testament. And the Old, one of the reasons the Old was written, as we read here in Corinthians, is for our teaching. But the Old is also an object lesson of the New. And I don't know if you will necessarily agree with me, and you don't have to. But if you really want a picture of the heart of God, just observe God working with his people through the Old Testament, and you will see expressions and feeling and emotion in the heart of God that tells us who God is. So this morning I'm going to be looking at an Old Testament story, thinking of middle-aged men losing the way. I'm going to use the board. And the first part here is simply a backdrop against just information leading up to the story we'll be looking at. It's recorded twice in the end of 1 Kings into 2 Kings, and it's also recorded in 2 Chronicles. And I'm not going to be reading a lot from either one because it covers various chapters, but I'm going to go through this story and give you the history leading up to it. Jehoshaphat was king of Judah. And he overlapped with Ahab, king of Israel. Ahab has the history of being very wicked, and it was because he was married to Jezebel, who was and is today even known as the epitome of wickedness. But they overlapped. And the scripture record of Jehoshaphat is largely good. But there's one thing that I've observed in the life of Jehoshaphat, and I don't understand this, I don't know why he did this, but somehow Jehoshaphat made friends with Ahab. Says he made affinity with him, and he associated with Ahab. And so you have this king of Judah that has a fairly good record, closely associating with the king of Israel, who has a very wicked record. As a matter of fact, Jehoshaphat went to battle with Ahab in the battle that Ahab lost his life. And if God would not have protected him, he would have been killed. Well, when Ahab was killed, his son Ahaziah became king. And Jehoshaphat did the same thing with Ahaziah. They got into a shipping venture, and it was a financial disaster. And the prophet rebuked Jehoshaphat for this. Well, Ahaziah wasn't king long, and he had no son when he died, so they put his, I assume it was his brother Jehoram, became king of Israel, and Jehoshaphat did the same thing. He went to battle with Jehoram and another king, and they were out in the desert, and they ran out of water, and they were afraid they were going to die from thirst. And so they found Elisha the prophet, and Jehoram asked him what they're supposed to do. And I wonder what Jehoshaphat thought when he heard Elisha's answer. Elisha told Jehoram, the son of Ahab, he said, if it wouldn't be for Jehoshaphat with you, I wouldn't even look at you. And I wondered what Jehoshaphat thought about that. But he was rebuked for that as well. So somehow, I don't know why, but somehow Jehoshaphat had an allegiance with all three of these kings. But then something else happened. Jehoshaphat had a son also by the name of Jehoram. Now it uses Joram and Jehoram both. So I'm going to call them both Jehoram, who became king after Jehoshaphat. There's one more. There's more to this. Jehoram married a woman by the name of Athaliah. Somebody tell me whose Athaliah's parents were.
Ahab and Jezebel.
That's right. It says that Jehoshaphat made affinity with Ahab. And one of the definitions of that word is they would arrange marriages for political advantage. And so you have Jehoshaphat connecting up with Ahab. And then you have his son marrying Ahab's daughter. Now, if we would add this will give you something else to think about. you can ponder that as we go through this story. So you had the daughter of Jezebel married to the king of Judah. Jehoshaphat's son was a wicked man. And so the prophet rebuked him for his sin and told him that the Lord would plague him. And Jehoram, the son of Jehoshaphat, became sick. And he had a disease in his stomach, and it tells us that his insides fell out and he died. It's an awful death. So he died, and so they made his son, Ahaziah, king. So, Jezebel was the king of Judah's grandmother. The daughter of Jezebel was his mother. I'm assuming the kings had more than one wife. And the king of Israel was his uncle. All tied together. One day, Elisha called one of the sons of the prophets, and he sent him on a mission. And part of that mission was to find Jehu and anoint him king. And he did that. And when the people, the captains that were with Jehu, found out what happened, they rallied around him, and so Jehu said, okay, if you are with me, then you make sure that word of this doesn't get out of the city. And he prepared himself, got his chariot ready, and he rode to Jezreel, because Jehoram, the son of Ahab, had been in battle and was wounded. And so he went to Jezreel to recover from his wounds, and his nephew Ahaziah, king of Judah, came down to see him. And when he was there, Jehu came on the scene. That's where you have the statement that he drove like Jehu. He came on the scene, and Jehoram and Ahaziah rode out to meet him, and Jehu killed both of them. He killed Ahaziah. He killed Jehoram. Rode his chariot into Jezreel, and he killed Jezebel. When they sent the men out to bury her, the dogs had eaten her like it was prophesied. He killed the 70 sons of Ahab. And he went to Samaria, and he met 42 brethren of Ahaziah, king of Judah, and he killed them. And the reason he did that was because God had sent him on a mission to destroy the house of Ahab for their sin. So, out of this, you have Jehu, king of Israel. Now, if you were Athaliah, what would you do? It was not safe to go back to Israel. So, she gathered her support and made herself queen. Maybe I should try another marker. Made herself queen. What's the first thing Athaliah did? What should she do? The seed royal. She killed the seed royal. Tell me this morning, of what lineage was your Jesus born of? The seed royal. She killed the seed royal, the lineage of David. She killed them down to one baby boy. Now, this is not the subject today, but I'm going to give it to you. And if you someday want something to think about and ponder, ponder this story and see what happens when the church cuddles up to the world. Jehoshaphat had an allegiance with Ahab, and out of that affinity, the daughter of Jezebel came within one man of wiping out the lineage of whom Jesus was born. If you want some sober meditation someday, you think about that. Well, God preserved his seed. And there was a woman by the name of Jehoshaphat, who was an aunt to Joash, the little boy, and she rescued Joash and his nurse. Jehoshaphat was married to Jehoiada the priest. And they hid Joash for 6 years. And in the 7th year, it tells us that Jehoiada gathered the princes of Judah together, and he informed them that there is a son of David. And so they rallied around him, and they made Joash king. And when Athaliah showed up at the coronation, they killed her. And so Joash, the son of David, at 7 years of age, was put on the throne. That is the backdrop of the story today. Joash, in chapter 24 of 2 Chronicles, it tells us how that he did what was right. It tells us how he restored the temple. They tore out the idols. They repaired the temple. He was the king that put the offering box inside the door, and people put in money. And they repaired the temple, and they restored the worship of Jehovah into the temple. And it was a good time in Judah. A very good time. Time passed like it does today, and it happened back then like it does today, and people get old. Jehoiada, the high priest, Joash's uncle, became old, and he died. And it tells us that after Jehoiada died, that the princes of Judah came to Joash, and they made obeisance to him. And it tells us that the king listened to them, and they left God and went and worshiped idols. One day, as they were going about this wickedness, there was a man who stood up, and he prophesied, and he rebuked the people, and he rebuked the king for their sin. This man was Zechariah, the son of Jehoiada. So he was a cousin to Joash the king. And there was this standoff. And Joash said, kill him. And they stoned him. And this is actually the Zechariah that Jesus mentions about the blood of all the prophets from Abel to Zechariah. This is the Zechariah he was talking about. And Joash condoned it and supported it. The story goes on that a small group from an enemy country came up against Judah and defeated a huge group in Judah, overpowered them. And it says afterwards, it says that his servants, Joash's servants, came in when he was in bed and they killed him. And it says the reason they killed him was because of the sons, plural, of Jehoiada that he had killed. Middle-aged men who lose the way. And I wonder, Joash, I wondered what happened. What happened, Joash? Why? And I don't have answers. I can't ask Joash that. But there's several things as I pondered this story and I thought of that conversation. There's several things out of this I'd like for us to consider. The first one is this in chapter 24, verse 2. It tells us that Joash did right all the days of Jehoiada, the high priest. And I wondered, Joash had been brought up in Jehoiada's family. They took care of him. They protected him. And Jehoiada had taught him about God, taught him about the law, taught him about the sacrifices, and taught him how to do all these things and what the law of Moses said. And I'm assuming that Joash had access to the law, the books of Moses, the Psalms. And he followed through and he did right things. It was right to restore the temple. It was right to restore worship. And all those things that the law said, it was right to do that. And it was good that he did that. But I wonder, Joash, did you never learn the God who wrote the law? Did you never learn God You know, there's a difference about knowing God and knowing about God. I grew up in a Christian home. I don't remember the first time I went to church. It's a good thing. I was taught to be honest. It's a good thing. I was taught to be respectful. It's a good thing. I was taught to be obedient, and it's a good thing. But those things are not the new birth. There is no substitute for meeting God face to face yourself, where each one of us has a Damascus Road experience, and we meet God. It's more than just the doing, but it is meeting the God who commands us the doing. And I wonder if that's what happened with Joash, and is that what happens with us today? We fall in line. We know the rituals, and they're not wrong. We know the words to say, and they're not wrong. But we never met with God. There's just no substitute for that. That Damascus Road experience where we see ourselves for what we are, and we see God for what He is, and we understand that we are completely and totally lost. I'll tell you, when you get there, you see Jesus Christ in a different light. And you realize that He is the only hope and the earmark of a transformed heart. I see it in Saul in the Damascus Road. And it was simply, God, what do you want me to do? That operation. The Bible talks about this operation that God performs. It's done without hands. And He takes this heart of stone, that cold, selfish, carnal heart, and He takes it out. And He gives us a heart of flesh. And there's one thing about that heart of flesh. It is designed, perfectly designed, for God through His Spirit to dwell there. And that is why there is a life of godliness. Not to gain favor, but simply because God is there. Godliness should be the result of the presence of God in our life. Joash, Joash, did you never meet God face to face? Maybe he did. Maybe he did meet God face to face. Maybe he knew God face to face. But you know, being a king is a weighty responsibility, and there's lots of duties that go with it. Do you think it's possible this morning that Joash, in the busyness of life, he didn't intend to. Do you ever intend to get lukewarm? Do you ever intend to become indifferent? Do you ever intend to become complacent? It just happens. It just happens. We get busy. Life is busy. We're doing good things. We're building the church. We're raising our families and all those things. And somehow, you know, there's something about starting something. We just went through that in our church planting. And there's the excitement and the euphoria of something starting. And it was exciting. But I'll tell you what one of our brethren said sometime later. He said, we are past the honeymoon stage of planting church. We're in it for the long haul. We're facing the reality of work is not like it was where we were. We're facing the reality that our finances aren't like they were. We're facing the reality that we are the new people. Instead of being the carpenter of choice, you're at the bottom of the list. It's real. And in church life, it's real. And there's something about maintaining something that has a way of wearing us out. And we don't intend to, but we just slide. It's the easiest thing in the world to become lukewarm. You just do nothing. It takes effort. And I wonder, Joash, did you forget? Did you forget to maintain that relationship? You started good, but you didn't keep it up. I wonder, Joash, this morning, Joash, did you lose? Did you lose that first love? In the busyness of life, did you lose that first love? Do you think it's possible? I noticed something else. If we go to verse 17, it talks about, it tells us here that after Jehoiada died, the princes came to Judah. And I know you can read into this story. I guess you can read a little bit what you want. And I don't mean to do the scriptures an injustice. But I get this picture, and maybe I'm wrong, but I get this picture that Jehoiada died, and here come the princes. it doesn't seem like there was much time. And I wondered in Joash's life, was he torn between the two? Jehoiada on this side, he grew up with Jehoiada, and as long as he was living, he knew his obligation to him, and he should have. But there was this constant pressure from the princes. Jehoiada taught what was right. The princes wanted to worship idols. And there's this constant pressure. You ever get weary of that? Just that pressure, torn between the two. The pressure of good and the pressure of evil. The spirit of God and the spirit of darkness. And you're in the middle and you're in the battleground. And I wondered, did Joash just become weary? Jehoiada died. The pillar that I leaned on, he's gone. And here come the princes, and I wonder if he just felt this overwhelming sense, it's no use. Do you ever feel that way? It's just no use. You've tried, God knows you've tried, and you really wanted to, but it doesn't matter what you do, you just can't succeed. Do you ever feel that way? That overwhelming sense that it's just absolutely no use. You have tried and tried and tried. I want to tell you this morning, it may seem that God is not paying any attention to the battle you're in, but I want to tell you that God is intently interested, very interested, and just because you can't feel him does not mean that he's not there. It just means you can't feel him. God is interested. He sees every tear. He sees every drop of sweat, and he knows where your heart is turned. And it may feel overwhelmingly like defeat, but remember, you are not defeated until you give up. I'd just like to encourage you this morning, and all of us, get off the ground, dust off your knees, pick up your shield, pick up the sword, adjust your armor, and take the next step. Just keep going. And it may well be that we will never know until later how much God actually did for us. But do remember that you have been called by him by name. And the prophet Isaiah said, you are mine. And the writer of Romans, Paul tells us, and he simply asked the question, he said, after everything that God has done through Jesus Christ to provide for us, do you think he's going to leave us sit? And he says, no. He will give us what we need to be successful, to go on. And I think sometimes, correct me if I'm wrong in saying this, but I think sometimes that the direction of our heart and the effort that we put into it means more to God than what we actually get accomplished. Am I right in saying that? God sees your heart, and he is concerned. I'm not condoning careless living, but he understands like none of us do. He does know, and he does care. He really does. Just don't ever give up. Just don't ever give up. God is interested in your story. How sad that Joash gave up. I've wondered in the heart of God, I've wondered how it must feel and how it must grieve his heart to have the crown of life that he wants to give to people, and they fall away. They lose the way. I wonder, what's he going to do with that crown? Maybe that's a foolish question. But that overwhelming sense of defeat. The battles of life are not intended to be fought alone. There is a reason, my friends, that God created and designed the church. And I wonder sometimes if God allows us to face difficult things in life to teach us the necessity of my brethren. It's a humbling feeling, to know that you're being carried by your church brethren. But it is a good feeling. And I feel so sorry for people who face difficult things and they withdraw into their closet and they close the door and they're in there all by themselves. I feel so sorry for them. The church is there to help us. God has given us the church. Let's not, in the difficult things of life, let's not withdraw from our brethren. It should be entirely permissible within the church of Jesus Christ to admit that I'm not making it and I need help. That should be permissible. And may we be there to help if that is the case. Joash, what would have happened? What would have happened, Joash, if you'd have just kept on going? One more day, one more step. How sad that you gave up. I was thinking of that standoff there in the temple. These two cousins, the prophet and the king, standing there. The king going his wrong way, the prophet rebuking him. And I would gather that they knew each other well. Joash grew up in Jehoiada's home, the way I would take the scriptures. And as I thought of that, I thought of the words of Samuel. When he came to Saul, and he said, "When you were little in your own eyes, then God sent you on a mission, and you disobeyed." And he went on to tell Saul that rebellion is as the sin of witchcraft, and he talked about stubbornness being as iniquity and idolatry. You know, this morning, I'm not stubborn. I'm not stiff-necked. I'm just right, okay? I'm just right. And I can't understand why you don't see that I'm right. Do you think it's what happened with Joash? You know, life was hard. Life was dangerous. But he became established. He became the king. The kingdom was established. He had his circle of friends, and he was king. And I wondered, Joash, was it just too hard? Was it just too hard to admit that you made a mistake? Was it just too hard? You know, we become older. We had talked about the gray hair in our Sunday school. And we should have more wisdom. We have experience in life. We have seen things in life. I'm old enough that I can remember people who were youth and today are gray-haired grandparents. And, you know, the way they lived in their youth and where they are now, you know, it makes sense. You can understand. You learn those things. But this morning, brethren and sisters, friends, it doesn't matter how much wisdom I have. It doesn't matter how much I know. I still don't have it all. And I will never get beyond the need of my brethren. And I believe it's so important that we cultivate within our heart the quality of our brethren being able to speak to us. That's so important. We never get to the place where we don't need the admonition of our brethren. We never get to the place where we have it all together. And if we could only get the vision of how much that our brethren can add to us and can enrich our lives. I can see out here, but there's a whole wall behind me that I can't see that you're seeing. Can we not spiritually, can we not share together and accept each other speaking into our life? Joash, was it just too hard to admit that you did wrong? Was it just too hard? I wondered, as I think of the life of Joash and the choices he made, another thing I thought of, we can look at life of Joash and we can say, you know, that was miraculous. It was absolutely a miracle that somebody rescued him. And it was. It was a miracle that Athaliah didn't find him those 6 years when he was hidden. It was a miracle. And we can talk about the miraculous things that happened in Joash's life. There's another side to that story. How would you like to have in your family genealogy that your grandfather was so wicked that his insides fell out and he died? How would you like to live with the knowledge that your grandmother killed all your male siblings How would it be like for the Kaufmans? We'd gather for a reunion, and there's only one alive. The rest have all been killed. Joash faced some awful things. He faced some hard things, atrocious things, horrible things. And I wonder, as Joash grew up, and he listened to Jehoiada speak of the law of God, and he looked at life, this is what happened to me. This is what the law says. I wondered if he read the book of Psalms, and he read how that God is so gracious. Gracious? I mean, my grandmother killed my brothers. God is gracious? Do you think Joash ever felt that life was unfair? He never had a normal childhood. Never had brothers to play with. Matter of fact, he couldn't play other than secret. You think he ever felt it's unfair? Unjust? Why did this have to happen to me? And I wonder, as Joash thought about that and he pondered life, and day by day went by, year by year went by, and those things simmered in his heart, way down in the closet of his heart, there was this corner where that feeling was just carefully put back there. And it was just that doubt. Not sure that God is really what Jehoiada is saying. And I can't put this together. I understand God and what people are saying about God and what happened. I can't put this together. And it just simmered there. Just quietly simmered. Year went by, and it just simmered. Until the day that Zechariah said, Joash, you're wrong. And something happened. All those feelings that had been carefully stored away, all of a sudden it just spilled out. And Joash did something that at one day he probably never would have dreamed he did. And that is, he killed the prophet of God, his own cousin. Does that sound familiar? Is it possible that that is why middle-aged men lose the way? Festering wounds, deep hurts in our heart, injustices of a life, and all those things. And we carry them with us. And we carry them with us. One thing happens and we carry it with us. Something else happens, now we have two to carry. Something else happens, now we have three. And then we have four. And then we have five. And years down the road, we have this huge accumulation. And we don't know how even to start. Wouldn't it be better to, one by one as they happen, to bring them back to God and allow God to do his redemptive work of healing in our heart? I wonder, Joash, was there a root of bitterness in your heart? I don't think it's a mistake, or I don't think it's an accident, that as you read down through Hebrews chapter 12, and it talks about chastening, and it talks about admonition, and it talks about suffering, I don't think it's an accident that as the writer goes down through there, he comes down to about verse 15, and he warns of the root of bitterness springing up. Hurts that haven't been taken care of. I was recently talking with a brother, good friend of mine from another community, and he made a very interesting statement, and I'm still pondering it. He was facing some difficulties in his own life, and their church was facing some troubled waters. And he made this comment. He said, I wonder if the reason that our church is facing the things we are is partly because we have too many people that have not learned how to take care of their hurts. And I've been pondering that. But the need of finding healing in God, and I'd like this morning to lift up Jesus Christ as someone who can heal the hurts of life. Life will never be the same. You probably know that. I'm not talking about God restoring our life to how it was, but I am talking of God taking the pieces of our life, what's left. Sometimes it doesn't feel like there's much left. But taking those pieces and out of the ashes of our dreams, designing and building something that honors him. And I've wondered already, I've pondered this question, and I don't have an answer for it. But the Bible talks about God being glorified in his people, and I have wondered, what am I willing to suffer and endure so that Jesus Christ can be glorified? I don't have an answer for that. But I would like to somehow, I mentioned to give us a vision of Jesus being the one who grants healing, and he is. But I would also like to, if I could, help us to see beyond the pain of life and to see that being used to build the kingdom of God. This morning, be careful. Let us be careful that we do not blame God for things that are not God's fault. Let's be careful that we don't do that. Joash, Joash, did you have a root of bitterness in your heart? And it finally defiled you. Well, Joash died. And he's not here this morning that we can ask him. But I wonder, Joash, how was it like, Joash, to close your eyes in death without God? What was it like, Joash? Joash, what was it like? Beyond that door of death, in that realm that we call eternity that none of us have ever been, and people who go there don't come back to tell us what it's like. What was it like, Joash, over there, to open your eyes without God? What was it like, Joash, to meet God? And there was sin in your heart. What was it like? This morning, Joash, if you could speak to us, what would you tell us? What would you tell us? Life must be measured with the equation of eternity in it before it will make sense. That's a sad story. It's always a sad story when someone loses the way. It's always a sad story. I would like to give you, as an encouragement, the words of another man at the end of his life. And this is totally, totally different, and I'm so glad that it is. This is the Apostle Paul. He said, "I am now ready to be offered, and the time of my departure is at hand. I have fought a good fight. I have finished my course, and I have kept the faith. Henceforth there is laid up for me a crown of righteousness, which the Lord, the righteous judge, shall give me at that day, and not to me only, but unto all them also that love his appearing." Love his appearing. That promise is not just to the Apostle Paul. That promise is to everyone, including you and I, who are faithful unto the end. That promise is there. It is possible to come to the end of life and to say this, to have kept the faith. And I will tell you this morning, in the difficulties of life, I don't know what you're facing. This is a strange community to me. I don't know even your names for the most of you. But I want to tell you that at the end of life, you will want to be with God. And if we want to get there with God, then we need to continue walking with God. May the Lord bless each one. Let's kneel for a word of prayer. Eternal Father, Lord God of heaven and earth, we bow our hearts to you, O God, grateful that we can, so grateful that in Jesus we can call you our Father. Thank you for the forgiveness of sins and for that operation that you do where you transform our hearts. Father, we pray this morning in the weariness of the journey, in the weariness of the battle, in the face of opposition, that we would not lose sight of your face, but that we would continue on and press onward and forward and upward to ever keep our eyes on the goal of someday meeting you. Thank you, O God, for your faithfulness. Forgive us, Father, where we doubt and where we question and where we fear. Help us to simply trust you and to know that in your hand all is well. We commit this congregation and each heart to you that's here today. God, we just pray your blessing, your presence, your direction, and your healing for your glory. In Jesus' name, amen.